2018. We reported in last week's news wrap on the law in Bermuda taking effect that replaced marriage equality with domestic partnerships. So naturally, 2 days after that newscast was distributed, the same court that had ruled for marriage equality in May 2017 overturned the domestic partnership replacement law and restored marriage equality to the island nation. Supreme Court Chief Justice Ian Kawali announced the ruling on June 6th, saying that the sections of the measure that revoked the right of same-gender couples to marry violated the British Overseas Territories Constitution, which guarantees the right to freedom of conscience and creed. The public gallery erupted in wild applause as the decision was being announced. Kawali wrote that persons who passionately believe that same-sex marriages should not take place for religious or cultural reasons are entitled to have those beliefs respected and protected by law, but in return for the law protecting their own beliefs. He said, they cannot require the law to deprive persons who believe in same-sex marriage of respect and legal protection for their opposing beliefs. Because the court said nothing about the domestic partnership provisions of the law, the ruling now gives same-gender couples the option of marriage or domestic partnerships.
However, the court stayed its ruling for 6 weeks to allow the government to appeal, as it's expected to do. Veteran gay journalist Rex Walkner says that such a challenge would be heard by the Court of Appeal, which meets only 4 times a year and is composed of 3 foreign judges. After that, one final appeal could be filed with the UK Privy Council. Cruise ship giant Carnival was forced to scuttle weddings at sea for same-gender couples that it had been promoting when lawmakers revoked marriage equality late last year. The company, whose subsidiaries include Cunard, Princess, and P&O Cruises, operates 24 vessels flying the Bermuda flag, primarily for financial reasons. It partially funded the successful challenge to the law that replaced marriage equality with domestic partnerships. And a statement issued soon after the law was overturned said the company looks forward to resuming its romantic weddings at sea for gay and lesbian couples, adding that, "We believe it is important to oppose any actions that restrict travel and tourism."
The European Union's Court of Justice issued a groundbreaking ruling this week that guarantees freedom of movement by married same-gender couples in all EU member states, whether or not a member state has itself opened civil marriage to queer couples. One of those countries without marriage equality is Romania. Adrian Coman sought recognition in his homeland of his legal Belgian marriage in 2010 to American Clay Hamilton. Without it, the couple can't settle in Romania as they'd like. It would be virtually automatic if they were a heterosexual couple. Coman appealed his case to EU justices after being rejected by Romanian courts. Although the member states have the freedom whether or not to authorize marriage between persons of the same sex, the Court of Justice of the European Union concluded in its June 5th decision, they may not obstruct the freedom of residence of an EU citizen by refusing to grant his same-sex spouse, a national of a country that is not an EU member state, a derived right of residence in their territory. In a media statement, Coman said that it is human dignity that wins today. The ruling confirms a January recommendation by the court's Advocate General. While those decisions are non-binding, justices usually endorse them.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this week that anti-religious bias by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission against devout Denver-area Christian baker Jack Phillips was enough to hand a narrow victory to him for refusing to make a wedding cake for a gay couple, Charlie Craig and David Mullins. While mainstream news coverage of the decision suggested that it was a major victory for so-called religious liberty, most legal eagles believe it was not. Many think that the ruling actually affirmed the right of LGBT people to not be discriminated against. We'll have comprehensive coverage and analysis immediately after this newscast on most of these This Way Out stations.
In other news, a unanimous vote in the Scottish Parliament on June 6th approved a measure to pardon gay and bisexual men who were convicted under since-repealed anti-gay sex laws. The Scotsman newspaper reported that the Police Service of Scotland counted almost 1,000 people who will be eligible for the pardons. Gay sex was outlawed in Scotland until 1980, when it was legalized for men over the age of 21. The age of consent for gay men was lowered to 16 in 2001, the same age of consent for heterosexual couples. When the bill was initially published in November of last year, First Minister Nicola Sturgeon issued a public apology to the men who were convicted under those laws.
Religious bodies in two countries have taken divergent paths in their treatment of legally married same-gender couples. Members of the General Synod of the Anglican Episcopal Church of Brazil voted 57-3 this week to approve church weddings of lesbian and gay couples. Brazil opened the civil institution to those couples in 2012. Outgoing primate Bishop Francisco de Assis da Silva told the Anglican Communion News Service that this widens our boundaries, allowing us to be more welcoming to the diversity of people in our country. The move is likely to add fuel to the fire that's already burning within the global denomination, pitting more progressive branches like the Canadian Anglican Church, the Episcopal Church in the U.S., and now Brazilian Anglicans against conservative traditionalists in what's known as the Global South, Africa, most of Latin America, and Asia, who believe that the Bible condemns same-gender love.
Meanwhile, the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland voted on June 8th to ban membership by same-gender couples and to deny baptism to their children. According to Pink News, documents of the harsh new policy adopted by the largest of the Presbyterian denominations in Ireland claim that, in light of our understanding of Scripture, it is clear that same-sex couples are not eligible for communicant membership, nor are they qualified to receive baptism for their children. We believe that their outward conduct and lifestyle is at variance with a life of obedience to Christ. And to add insult to injury, the Assembly also voted to cut ties with the Church of Scotland, which has relaxed its policies on blessing civilly married gay and lesbian couples.
But Guyana hosted its first ever LGBT Pride Parade on June 2nd. Marchers in the small South American nation focused on broken election campaign promises by both major parties to outlaw discrimination against vulnerable groups, including LGBTQ people. Happily, there were no confrontations between activists and opponents, as some had feared. One local outlet reported that several curious onlookers turned out at the starting point and along the route to get a glimpse of the parade by people of all walks of life, races, and ages. Activist Joel Simpson praised the police for ensuring a peaceful march. "They served and protected us tonight," he said. At the post-parade rally, Simpson criticized several conservative Christian pastors in Georgetown who had called on the government to ban what they called an illegal march. "Aren't we all entitled to freedom of assembly, freedom of association, freedom of expression, equal protection of the law, and every right under the Constitution? I don't know what they are talking about," he said. Several marchers carried placards with messages like "Walking with pride and love," "LGBT rights are human rights," and "Be who you are, not who the world wants you to be."
And finally, it was once thought that mincing his words was a telltale sign that a man was gay. Well, an out-and-proud candidate for the Democratic nomination for governor in the U.S. state of Maryland isn't mincing his words in a new political ad. In fact, you should be able to hear the coup de grace during the last shot in the ad of the candidate with his husband of 16 years and their two adorable children of color.
"I'm Rich Madalino. I'm running for governor to deliver progressive results and to stand up to Donald Trump. Here are a few of the things I've done that already infuriate him. I protected Planned Parenthood from the Republicans in Congress.
Take that, Trump.
I helped ban assault weapons in Maryland.
Take that, NRA.
I believe in public schools, not vouchers.
Take that, Trump.
And Betsy DeVos.
Yeah!
And what's the number one way I piss off Donald Trump and the Republicans? Take that, Trump."
His campaign manager, Keith Pressley, said that they made sure to include Fox and Friends, a show known to be a particular favorite of Mr. Trump, when they bought time for the ad on local cable and TV shows. Pressley told USA Today that, "We wanted to make sure the president had an opportunity to see this ad."
It's a little bit sad.
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude for the week ending June 2nd, 2018, written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the all-new thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Frances O'Brien.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as the gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake, baked a cake, baked a cake. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake. Well, how'd you do, how'd you do, how'd you do?
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. But here's what much of the mainstream media coverage got wrong. The June 4th decision was not definitive on the broader issue of religious-based discrimination in the marketplace. Instead, the court zeroed in on the point that in this particular case, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had been openly antagonistic toward religion in its ruling against the baker. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote in the High Court's decision that future cases would need to be determined with tolerance, without undue respect to sincere religious beliefs, and without subjecting gay persons to indignities when they seek goods and services in an open market. You may not have gotten those fine points if you only heard reports like this.
The Denver-based baker, Jack Phillips, had argued that his rights of religious freedom and free speech meant that he shouldn't have to make a cake for a ceremony he finds offensive to his faith, which is why he refused to make a wedding cake for a gay couple who came into his shop in 2012. That couple took the case to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which ruled that the public accommodations law requires businesses to serve customers equally and cannot discriminate according to sexual orientation. The U.S. Supreme Court ruling is seen as a victory for the Christian religious right in the U.S. and as a blow to civil rights and gay rights advocates. In Denver, I'm Mary McCarthy.
Out San Francisco politician Mark Leno told Pacifica Evening News that he and many other equality advocates are concerned that the general public is receiving a misleading account of the ruling.
We cannot dictate to religious organizations. Government cannot do that because of the First Amendment protection to freedom of religion. But that doesn't mean businesses that serve the public have the right to discriminate. But this Supreme Court sent a message, whether it was a narrowly defined decision today or not, there's great risk and danger that this country will understand this differently.
It's a huge public relations win for the right wing because this has been reported all over as a win for the baker, a win for religious actions.
So, is it a precedent or a paint job? Our friends Ann Northrup and Andy Hum discussed the High Court ruling at length on their Gay USA TV show this week with James Essex, director of the ACLU LGBT and AIDS Project.
Monday was a difficult day for us at the ACLU, but also obviously for the clients, that Dave Mullins and Charlie Craig, the two guys who are at the center of this, and they bear the brunt of what the court thinks of as anti-religion hostility by the Civil Rights Commission. Dave and Charlie had nothing to do with that, and it's really unfortunate and I think a travesty that they bear the burden.
So what do you think of the news coverage?
The problem is that, headlines are short, and the reality is that this was a loss for us. The baker wins.
The baker is Jack Phillips.
And Charlie and Dave lose. But I think that there is an awful lot in this decision that is actually very good for LGBT people going forward. And I think the core point is our opponents, Alliance Defending Freedom and anti-LGBT advocates like them, have been pushing a campaign for a long time to use religious exemptions as a way to undermine LGBT equality. And this was their effort to get a ruling that said that the Constitution requires discrimination, that the Constitution gives them a license to discriminate based on their religious beliefs or based on their artistic freedom. And that is precisely what they did not get in this opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you say the Baker won, but he didn't win. He did not win the right to discriminate on the basis of religion.
Absolutely.
All he won was a technical decision that the Human Rights Commissioner had spoken disparagingly of his religious beliefs, and therefore he doesn't have to sell the cake, but that's not an overall right.
Exactly. What the bakery and Alliance Defending Freedom get out of this is a ruling that says, well, when and if a government agency that's an adjudicator of legal claims, like the Civil Rights Commission or a court, acts in a way that is anti-religion, that violates the Constitution. But that's all they got, and it's not what they were looking for.
Obviously, the decision is deeply disappointing for our clients, Dave and Charlie, as well as Charlie's mother, Debbie, who was with them there that day and hoped to help her son select his wedding cake. And of course, the experience ended up being very different.
Rhea Marr is a senior staff attorney with the ACLU and the counsel of record for the couple in Masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission. She echoed some of her ACLU colleagues James Essex's analysis during her appearance this week on Democracy Now!
But let's be clear, this was not the win the bakery had asked for, or the Trump administration, which had backed the bakery in the case. You know, the court reversed based on peculiar facts in the history of the Civil Rights Commission's handling of this case. Those facts aren't likely to be repeated anytime soon. And in the process, the court recognized that Colorado can and should act to prevent the harms of discrimination in the marketplace, including when it comes to LGBT people.
Essex underscored the importance of the LGBTQ rights-affirming language in the decision.
The opinion is full of language from six justices on this court that is very affirming of stuff that we all agree on, but now is in the Supreme Court decision. What are those things? It says that the state has the power to pass civil rights laws that bar discrimination against people in Colorado, including LGBT people. It talks about the harm of discrimination as a real thing. Look, that shouldn't be a big deal, but in this context, it is. And most importantly, they recognize, they say, look, it's true that clergy, ministers, have a constitutional right based on free exercise of religion to make distinctions among people's marriages. They can say, we're going to marry you and we're not going to marry you. That's part of their faith. They get to do that. The government can't tell them they have to do something different. That of course, is no one was ever arguing anything different. But the decision says that, of course, we can't go that right that clergy has, that can't be extended to businesses and to be extended broadly, because we would end up in a situation where many, many businesses might be turning, for example, same-sex couples away, and that would cause incredible stigma. And it also says, look, that would lead to a situation where businesses would be free to put signs up in their windows that say, for example, wedding cakes for heterosexuals only. And it's clear that Justice Kennedy doesn't think that's okay. And it's not just Justice Kennedy, but six justices sign on to that language. Businesses do not have the right to put signs in their window that say, no Muslims, no gay people, etc.
In 2015, a Washburn, Tennessee Baptist minister actually posted a No Gays Allowed sign in the window of his hardware store in response to the Supreme Court ruling on marriage equality, but he was pressured to remove it. What just happened as a result of the misleading headlines about the new ruling? It's back! On the other hand, an Arizona State Appeals Court cited this week's ruling to find against a Christian-owned Phoenix-area calligraphy company. The company claimed that requiring them to make wedding invitations for same-gender couples was a violation of their freedom of religion. San Francisco Supervisor Jeff Sheehy worried about a false dichotomy at play.
One of the things I find really offensive about it is underlying all of this is an assumption that LGBT folk are not people of faith. We are Catholic. We are Jewish. We are Episcopalian. We are Methodist. We are Baptist. We also are people of faith. And somehow to set religion on one side and the LGBT community on the other is completely sinister in my view.
Then what of the cake maker? Would his rights to freedom of speech and freedom of expression be denied if he were forced to bake Dave and Charlie's wedding cake, as his attorneys argued before the High Court? The ACLU's James Essex untangled that constitutional knot.
Yes, there are products that businesses produce and sell that are creative, that are expressive. And I'm happy to say that you admit that cakes can be in that category. But the legal question that the court should be engaging with, and this is the doctrine that they have applied in many other contexts, even though they didn't really apply it here, is something that says, look, the question isn't how expressive is this product. The question is, when the state legislature passed the civil rights law in Colorado, were they aiming at speech, or were they aiming at religion, or were they aiming at conduct? If they were aiming at speech or religion, that's a big problem. Government is not supposed to be aiming at stifling people's speech and expression or stifling, restricting people's religious beliefs. But if they're aiming at conduct, that is the conduct of selling goods and services in the commercial marketplace by businesses open to the public, that is perfectly constitutional, even if some of the businesses are engaged in activities that are expressive. The court has said again and again, if the state legislature, the law is not aimed at speech or aimed at religion, even if it has incidental effects on expressive activity, it is constitutional.
The ACLU's Ria Maher also noted that the court did seem to recognize the need for discrimination protections for LGBT people.
It's worth noting that argument, if accepted, would not have been limited to discrimination against LGBT people and could have implicated many of the other characteristics protected under Colorado law, including race, religion, and disability. And the court didn't go that far. It had concerns about the way the Civil Rights Commission had handled this particular case. But in the process of doing that, it repeatedly underscored the significance of laws like Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act, which have a long and storied history, dating in this case to 1885, the Reconstruction era. So you see the majority really understood the significance of laws like these to our ability to participate freely in the marketplace. And the court today said the same is true when it comes to people who are LGBT.
Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were the only two dissenters from the majority ruling written by Justice Anthony Kennedy. And Kennedy has written virtually every queer positive U.S. Supreme Court decision since 2003. Gay USA's Andy Hum asked the ACLU's James Essex about the vote.
This was a 7-2 decision. I mean, some people might want to say, well, that makes it a good decision.
I don't know that it makes it good or bad. I think that what's going on here is we will never see, or history will tell, when the various justices' papers are released in 50 years or whenever it is that happens, maybe we'll learn more about what the horse trading was. What did they get? But look, it's a common thing in courts, whether it's three-judge courts at the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court or other state courts. You have multiple justices, and they go back and forth. I'll sign if you change this. I'll sign you if you add that. If people are wondering, well, how in the world could Kagan and Breyer sign on to this thing? That is what was going on there, and that's a normal thing, and that's part of how we get protected.
Andy Hum got Essex to peer into the judicial crystal ball.
We're most concerned about where the court's going to go in the future, and there are other cases we're concerned about. Most prominently, the cases that say discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation is sex discrimination. Transgender is sex discrimination.
Yes.
That's going to be the big enchilada, is it not?
It may well be. I think there's a decent chance that the court is going to take one or more of the cases that raise this sex discrimination question. Do the bans on sex discrimination in federal civil rights law, do they cover lesbian, gay, bisexual people? There are two petitions pending right now. They won't be decided until the fall on that question. And then there's a petition coming in August with the same question about, do the bans on sex discrimination cover transgender people?
Do you want the court? I mean, of course, it's going to be decided by the makeup of the court, but do you want the court to decide this?
Well, that's a difficult question. There are now five or six federal appeals courts, different circuits, regional, geographically defined regional courts in the federal system that agree that trans people are covered. In lots of different contexts, in education and in unemployment, et cetera.
Yeah.
And now there are two federal appeals courts, federal circuits, that agree that lesbian, gay, and bisexual people are. You know, one track is to just build that out so that when the Supreme Court ultimately gets the question, most of the courts are already on board. So the difficult question is, do you pull the trigger and ask for the Supreme Court to decide that right now? Two of those three petitions are by employers that don't like the fact that federal appeals courts have said that LGBT people are covered, and we don't have any control over that they have asked for it. One of the petitions is by an employee from in Atlanta who was told, "Oh, you can't bring that claim," by the courts, and is saying to the Supreme Court, "Hey, you know, that's not fair."
While we're waiting for the law to catch up with the world, what are we doing and not doing now?
In the wake of this decision, two things happened. One, we didn't take to the streets over this decision. I mean, I'm not happy with it, but I mean, but we didn't take to the streets. But also, the other thing that happened is a wave of people across the country are saying, you know, we are open. Our business is open to all. Open to all is the hashtag.
Yeah, open to all is the hashtag. People should go look at it. It is a truly amazing coalition of organizations. It's not just LGBT people. It's every civil rights movement that there is, all getting together.
So the culture has changed in that way, and will the law keep up with it?
Yeah.
We hope this analysis of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in the case of Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission has brought you a better understanding of what it was and was not. As always, stay tuned for further developments as they happen on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from John Dyer V and Michelle Yeader, with thanks to Brian DeShazer, and from the Pacifica Evening News, Democracy Now!, and Andy Hum and Ann Northrup of Gay USA TV. The Fontaine Sisters and Elvis Presley performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the Estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz, California, CHMA Sackville, New Brunswick, 2BOB Turin, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And with a hearty welcome to our newest listeners at WELT in Fort Wayne, Indiana, we say, stay tuned.
Played football and baseball and basketball. He did wrestling. He ran track. He played soccer. In college, he even wrote for 3 years for the college newspaper as their sports columnist. Then he went into the Navy, and he was a deep sea diver in the Navy. And he finally got a job on Wall Street as a securities analyst. It's not the Harvey Milk that we know.
No.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Queer historian Lillian Faderman milks the unknown Harvey. Poland's top court rejects a printer's refusal to make LGBT banners, and Tony winners rally for the resistance. Those stories and more this week, because you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 16, 2018. Poland's Supreme Court ruled this week that a print shop employee violated the principle of equality before the law when he refused to make banners for the LGBT business forum because he didn't want to promote gay rights. The nation's top court upheld a lower court decision that the printer did not have the right to withhold services based on sexual orientation or other personal characteristics. Poland's Justice Minister and Attorney General, Zbigniew Ziobro, of the ruling right-wing Law and Justice Party, brought the appeal. He angrily told reporters that the justices had served the ideology of homosexual activists. Many people, especially in the U.S., were quick to draw comparisons to last week's ruling by America's Supreme Court that upheld a Colorado baker's right, on narrow religious grounds, to refuse to make a wedding cake for a gay couple. Yaroslav Yaruga, a lawyer with the Helsinki Foundation for Human Rights, sees some similarities. But he noted that religious belief was not a specific factor in the Polish High Court decision. He said that while ruling that sexual orientation can't be the basis for refusal of service, the justices also said that there can be exceptions based on the nature of the service being rendered. Sometimes freedom of conscience and religion will be a legitimate reason for the refusal to perform the service, Yaruga explained, and at other times may constitute a manifestation of unauthorized discrimination.
Yet another U.S. federal court continues to deny President Trump's attempted ban on military service by qualified transgender enlistees from taking effect. Judge Marsha Peckman of the U.S. District Court for the Western District of the State of Washington issued a preliminary injunction against the ban in December and on June 15th denied the Trump administration's request to lift it. She said that the administration had not shown that it would suffer irreparable harm if the ban remained blocked, but that current and aspiring transgender service members would be hurt if it went into effect. The status quo shall remain, steady as she goes, she wrote, and the preliminary injunction shall remain in full force and effect nationwide. Three other federal judges around the country have also blocked the ban from becoming a reality.
June's LGBTQ Pride Month is in full swing around the world. St. Croix and the U.S. Virgin Islands celebrated Pride for the first time on June 9th, despite anonymous social media threats that participants would be gunned down en masse. Local police and agents in the FBI field office in San Juan, Puerto Rico, are reportedly investigating the threats. Anti-queer protesters who were far outnumbered by Pride marchers were kept at bay by a strong police presence. Police Chief Winsbutt McFarland told local media that, at the end of the day, these individuals pay taxes, work in our community, and are members of our community, and because of that, my obligation is to the safety of this community, and that's what we did today. The Advocate spotted a few dignitaries in the crowd, including the territory's delegate to Congress, Stacey Plaskett, and gubernatorial candidate Albert Bryan. Bryan said that people in the Caribbean, many of whom are of African descent, should be able to relate to the fight for LGBT rights. He told the Virgin Islands Consortium that 67 years ago, we were the ones who were hosed when we were marching, so we have to realize that in this world, people have a right to be who they are.
Organizers said that 500,000 people attended Rome's annual Pride celebration on June 9th. With the theme of Rainbow Brigade Liberation Continues, marchers demanded that civil marriage replace the currently available but inferior civil unions and protested the denial of adoption rights to those couples.
Thousands also celebrated Pride on June 9th in two countries that are considered to be less than friendly to LGBTQ rights. According to the Associated Press, a party-like atmosphere prevailed in Warsaw as people waved rainbow flags and danced.
A festive mood also characterized the Pride parade in the Romanian capital of Bucharest. Activists there were especially celebrating the recent European Court of Justice ruling on behalf of a Romanian gay man and his American-born husband that requires all member states to grant residency to same-gender spouses, even if the country itself, like Romania, doesn't offer civil marriage to its own lesbian and gay couples.
China's largest city, Shanghai, celebrated its 10th year of Pride on June 9th. According to a report in Time magazine, more than 40 individual events began with a three-mile fun run and included a pink brunch, a film festival, and a trivia night. China's communist government has not been consistent in its treatment of LGBTQ people or issues, allowing some queer cultural events to go on while censoring or shutting down others, most recently some popular queer-focused web sites. Brian Song, who helped organize Shanghai Pride's The Journey of Light Choir concert that featured English and Chinese songs performed by seven LGBT-friendly choirs from across the country, told Time that, "We were a little bit worried that maybe our concert would get canceled because of the current environment regarding LGBT in the media."
A phobic Christian minister in Anchorage, Alaska, failed miserably in his effort to preach at what has become an increasingly popular new wrinkle on Pride celebrations.
Pastor Dave Grisham of Last Frontier Evangelism posted video of himself bursting into the Luzac Public Library during a private drag queen story hour. It was an official event during Anchorage's Pride Fest celebration. His unscheduled appearance didn't go over well with the children or their parents.
Morris pretends he can't hear their words over the swish, 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 crinkle, 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 and click, click, click he makes when he walks.
Hey kids, my name is Pastor David, and I wanted to tell you today that there is no such thing as there's no such thing as transgenders. Transgenders do not exist. They do not exist. God made men, women, men, and women, women.
You do not have a ticket, sir. You do not have a ticket. You are being disruptive. You do not have the right.
Grisham is well known in the Anchorage area for disrupting queer positive events. He's even tried his homophobic and transphobic preaching at LGBT Christmas parties where children were present.
Queer fans who plan to go to football's World Cup in Moscow this week were repeatedly warned to keep a low profile. Anti-queer violence has more than doubled in Vladimir Putin's Russia since he signed a law in 2013 making the dissemination of gay propaganda to minors a crime. And his government has denied numerous credible reports of a brutally murderous anti-queer purge in Chechnya, claiming that there are no LGBT people at all in that mostly Muslim region of the country. Social media has been filled with threats by thugs to attack any perceived to be queer fans at the World Cup. Members of the Cossack militia announced that they'd be patrolling a number of the games to help police prevent gay men from kissing. The first reports of homophobic violence came on opening day. A gay couple who had traveled from France to cheer on their national team was targeted and attacked in St. Petersburg after they caught a taxi. One of the men, identified only as O. Davrius, was hospitalized after the assault with severe brain trauma and a fractured jaw. His partner, who wasn't named, was less seriously injured. They were also robbed of their money and cell phones. Two suspects are reportedly already in custody.
But finally,
I dedicate this award to the countless LGBTQ people who have fought and died for the right to live and love as we are created to.
That's Andrew Garfield accepting the Best Lead Actor in a Play trophy at the annual Tony Awards on June 10th for his performance as Prior Walter in the Broadway revival of Tony Kushner's Angels in America. The multi-talented Nathan Lane took home the award for Best Featured Actor in a Play for his role as slimy, closeted gay lawyer Roy Cohn in Angels, and Tony Kushner himself accepted the Tony for Best Revival of a Play. For each of them, the personal was also political.
I want to thank Tony Kushner for being such an adorable genius. Even his emails are Pulitzer-worthy. I'm standing here because Tony wrote one of the greatest plays of the 20th century, and it is still speaking to us as powerfully as ever in the midst of such political insanity. I want to send my thanks and love, most importantly, to my to my dear husband, Devlin Elliott, the greatest blessing in my life. Thank you very much.
21 weeks till November 6th, the midterm elections. 21 weeks to make sure that the right of citizens to vote is protected and exercised. 21 weeks to save our democracy and heal our country and heal our planet. And then, what kind of a homosexual would I be if I didn't say, it's June 10th, happy birthday, Judy Garland. Bye.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 16th, 2018, written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at the all-new thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
He's a rebel and he'll never ever be any good. He's a rebel and he never ever does what he should.
Just because he doesn't do what everybody else does.
That's the reason why we can't share our love. He is always good to me, good to him I try to be. Cause he's my rebel and I know that up. He's my rebel and I know that up to me.
Charismatic, eloquent, a wit, and a smart aleck. That's how Lillian Faderman describes one queer icon in her latest book, Harvey Milk, His Lives and Death. Those same words could be said of Faderman herself, who's a queer icon in her own right. The renowned LGBTQ historian talked about how she created a different kind of biography of Milk with Ralph Radabaugh and Rita Gonzalez of the KPFK Los Angeles podcast, The Out Agenda.
Lillian, besides the obvious, why Harvey Milk now? And why Harvey Milk at all? I mean, yes, he's a gay icon, incredibly interesting person, but what is it that inspired you to want to write a book about him?
I did a book called The Gay Revolution that came out in 2015, and I did a lot of research and interviews on Harvey for that book, and it's a huge book. It's an 800-page book, but I cover a period from 1948 to 2015. I finished just before it went to press. And, of course, I could only spend about maybe 15 pages on Harvey there, but I had discovered such interesting material that nobody had dealt with before. Randy Schiltz wrote a wonderful book about Harvey in 1982, the mayor of Castro Street, but the material that I found wasn't available to him. And Yale University Press came to me after the Gay Revolution, my 2015 book, came out, and asked if I would be interested in doing a book on Harvey for their series called Jewish Lives. And, of course, it took me about 10 seconds to say yes. I had just come to admire him. And to see him for the person he was, and he was in many ways very flawed. He had a lot of warts, as I discovered, but he was also so heroic, and I think I can say that I really came to love him. There was a documentary about his life, of course, the movie Milk in 2008, and he had been, I think, more honored than any gay person. He received the Presidential Medal of Freedom. There was a stamp with his image on it that was issued. There's going to be a ship named after him. It will be the U.S. Navy ship Harvey Milk.
Well, he was kind of interesting, too, in the fact that he didn't start out as an activist. I mean, he was born in New York, came to California, landed in San Francisco in Castro Street, and opened up a camera shop.
Yeah, he was a chameleon in the true sense of the word. He was an opera lover, even as a kid. He discovered opera at the age of 11. But he became a jock in high school and in college, too, maybe to hide that secret passion that he feared would somehow associate him with things effete. And so he played every single sport. He played football and baseball and basketball. He did wrestling. He ran track. He played soccer. In college, he even wrote for 3 years for the college newspaper as their sports columnist. Then he went into the Navy, and he was a deep sea diver in the Navy, and he came out, didn't know what he wanted to do, but he had a credential from college, and so he taught high school for 1 year. He was really unhappy doing that. He and his lover at the time went to Dallas, Texas, where he sold sewing machines. He was unhappy doing that. He came back. He finally got a job on Wall Street as a securities analyst. It's not the Harvey Milk that we know.
No.
And he got involved with someone who was in the theater, who was very much a hippie during the 1960s, and Harvey became a hippie, grew his hair long, became a real advocate of pot smoking, dressed in denim and had a huge mustache, looked very much like a radical in the 1960s, moved to San Francisco with his then lover. They didn't know how they would make a living, and the story is that they sent some film out to be developed at a store in the Castro, and it came back with all of the pictures virtually destroyed. And Harvey said to his lover, Scott Smith, we should open a camera store where we'll take good care of people's film. They didn't sell cameras. They couldn't afford it because they didn't have much money, but they developed film. They rented projectors. They had camera equipment, but very few cameras. They sold a few very inexpensive cameras. And in 1973, it was really a turning point in Harvey's life because the Watergate hearings happened, and he just absolutely hated Richard Nixon, but he watched the hearings faithfully. He hated John Mitchell. He hated John Dean. And he thought at that point, politics is really corrupt. Someone has to get into politics who will do it right, not the way Nixon and his team did it. He ran for office the first time in 1973. But, you know, he was complex even in his personality. For instance, he wasn't just on the board of supervisors to promote gay rights. He was very interested in promoting the rights of senior citizens. He was really interested in things like rent control, for instance. He was very interested in making coalitions with ethnic and racial minorities. He was very interested in helping young people and in the rights of young people. He was wonderful with people much of the time. I interviewed so many people who knew Harvey personally and who told me that when he talked to them, he made them feel as though whatever they were saying was the most important thing to be listening to at that time. And yet, with his lovers, he could be so explosive, really sort of insensitive. He loved them. I found love notes that would really tear at anyone's heartstrings that he wrote to his lovers, and yet he didn't give them attention when they absolutely needed and craved his attention. He was too busy being a politician. And yet here was this guy who just absolutely loved humanity without a doubt. So that was a huge contradiction. I think he was really sincere in what he believed politically, and I think that drove him to become a politician.
If I'm fighting for gay rights, then either I'm a hypocrite or I have to fight for the rights of everybody. And once I fight for the rights of everybody, then I have to fight for the spending priorities of everybody, or I'm a hypocrite. And I don't think I'm a hypocrite, and that's why I've been involved in the issues of the district for so long, so hard.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin, author of Tales of the City, and you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio news magazine produced by, about, and for our sexually diverse communities and those who love them.
I'm Rita Gonzalez, along with Ralph Radaba. We are speaking with Lillian Faderman on her new book, Harvey Milk, His Lives and Death. How did you get all this other information on him?
Well, I did some interviews with family members who told me a lot about Harvey's family, and I write about that much more extensively than had been written about before. I start with the patriarch of the family. His grandfather came from Lithuania and was a peddler for a while, and it's just an incredible success story, so I start with that. I found letters that were not available when Randy Schiltz was writing the mayor of Castro Street, letters that were actually written to a young woman in Los Angeles. Harvey lived in Los Angeles for just a few months, but made friends with a young woman who became his confidant from 1955 to the early 1960s. And those letters were so revealing to me because Harvey told her so much of his personal life and his personal thoughts, and they had nothing to do with politics. They just had a lot to do with his romantic feelings. He had fallen in love with a young man by the name of Joe Campbell, And he was just so incredibly romantic in those letters to Susan Davis. Susan Davis Altsch, she was eventually called because she got married. At one point, Harvey was just so restless because he didn't know what he wanted to do with his life, and he spills that part of his life out to Susan Davis. So it was just a whole view of him that nobody had talked about before. I also discovered letters and notes that he wrote to the guy who was actually the director of Hair on Broadway and Jesus Christ Superstar, a man by the name of Tom O'Horgan. He and Tom O'Horgan became very good friends, and Tom was a correspondent even when Harvey moved to San Francisco. And when Harvey was finally elected to the Board of Supervisors, he wrote these wonderful notes to Tom O'Horgan that really gave another insight into him, just his great pride in having been elected. And he wrote to Tom about how he was going to have a banquet celebrating his election, and Mervyn Dimely, who was the lieutenant governor of California, would be a speaker at the banquet. And he said something to the effect of, who would believe that this faggot would have a banquet in his honor in which the lieutenant governor would give a speech. And then he invited Tom O'Horgan to come to the banquet. He was invited by the San Diego Opera to sit in a VIP box to watch an opera singer that Harvey very much admired, who was already 68 years old, and Harvey had seen him when he was a kid at the Metropolitan Opera, where he was standing in the standing room. And he wrote to Tom O'Horgan about that experience, which was so exciting to him. He talked about sitting next to another famous opera singer in this VIP box. And he said to Tom O'Horgan, oh, life can be so wonderful. And I found that note so moving because it was actually written 2 days before his assassination.
It's amazing to have these letters that people had. I mean, nowadays people don't even do letters. It's just,
I know, I worry so much about
it. I do too. I was thinking about that right now. I said, because that's how you found out about people, who they were by their letters, not emails.
Right. I don't know what future historians are going to do, because so much of these great archives where I've done so much of my work, the collections are mostly letters. And what's going to happen when there aren't letters like that?
Lillian, is there any chance that you have a short little passage from the book that you'd like to read?
Yes, I would be happy to do that, yeah. Should I read from the introduction? Is that
sure, if that's
place?
What you'd like to read from.
Okay. Harvey Milk, charismatic, eloquent, a wit and a smart aleck, was one of the first openly gay men to be elected to any political office anywhere. On November 18, 1977, soon after he won a seat on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, he made three tape recordings that he distributed to close friends, to be played only in the event of my death by assassination, he instructed at the beginning of each tape. Though he did not keep it a secret from associates that he had made the tapes, when his irreverent young City Hall intern, Cleve Jones, learned of them, he teased Harvey, "Hey, you're not Martin Luther King. You're not important enough." Harvey was shot to death 1 year and 9 days later by Dan White, a fellow supervisor who had complained that San Francisco was being turned into Sodom by men who would not hide their homosexuality, and that Harvey Milk was in the forefront of the city's abhorrent transformation. The words Harvey dictated into his tape recorder would have sounded foolishly melodramatic had he died a natural death, but with his murder, they took on the weight of prophecy. If a bullet should enter my brain, he had said on the tape he made for his friend Frank Robinson, let that bullet destroy every closet door.
I'm Rita Gonzalez, along with Ralph Radaba.
Our guest has been
Lillian Faderman with her book, Harvey Milk, His Lives and Death.
Every gay person must come out. As difficult as it is, you must tell your immediate family, you must tell your relatives, you must tell your friends if indeed they are your friends, you must tell your neighbors, you must tell the people you work with, you must tell the people in the stores you shop in, and once you do, you will feel so much better.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Jessica Andrea and Michael LeBeau, with thanks to Brian DeShazer, and from Rita Gonzalez and Ralph Radaba. Buena Vista performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors who make this program possible. Help keep our 30-year streak going at the all-new thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on 4NSA Noosa, Queensland, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, KOOP Austin, Texas, and on more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned. Oh,
Good evening. The time is 7 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And up next is Calculated Conversations.
All I know, I keep making this fooler. I stay protected, that blue steel it do ya. Yeah, my chick bad and I keep the Kill Bill, yeah. Born and raised, thoroughbred trio. Let's go, let's go.
Hey, this is Randy West coming from OSP at our annual Yahoo Sasa Talent Show.
Yeah, let me be clear about it. I got it. You way out of pocket, go bring this shit here. Getting body back, tipping the bottle back. This is a
yeah, this your boy TJ down in OSP, man. I'm telling you, rap music, you know what I'm saying, R&B, you know what I'm saying, got a little bit of comedy up in there, man.
Y'all make sure y'all tune in June 25th at 6:30 p.m. Check out some of these guys from the OSP prison doing their thing, you know. We got a lot of acts and a lot of talent in here to share with the world, so just make sure y'all check that out. June 25th, 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline, y'all.
Tell me, baby, are we gonna let the elevator bring us down? Oh, no, let's go.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This three-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune in to KBOO